The Athletic.
Jordan, you're a great professional. Well, tell me you're going to get absolutely rotten tonight, like me.
Possibly.
Come on, Jordan, go for it, lad. Enjoy yourself.
Cheers, Carol.
Cheers.
Out of the Super League and increasingly looking like they'll be out of the Champions League at this rate. A pretty tough week to stomach, ending in deflation as Newcastle came up with the Late Late Show at Anfield. It's your dedicated Liverpool podcast, The Red Agenda. I'm Steve Hothersall. Kiefer O'Neill, Simon Hughes, James Pearce on today's pod. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic with a special 40% discount. Just for listening to our podcast, you'll be able to read Kiefer's piece on what Liverpool fans around the world made of the doomed European Super League, as well as James's piece this weekend on the game against Newcastle that summed up Liverpool's sorry season. For all that and much more, go to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod and sign up with a 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Keith, we'll start with yourself. Liverpool finishing the week pretty much in the fashion they started it, shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, it was a calamity, wasn't it? And obviously when the goal was ruled out by VAR, you know, Wilson's goal, which I think probably if that was ruled out for Liverpool, you'd think that was massively unfair, wouldn't you? But Liverpool bailed out by VAR, which has rarely happened this season. And then obviously you're kind of waiting for the punchline, which arrived through Willock's finish. Just, you kind of knew it was coming. You sort of, you're seeing Klopp's face and you kind of almost knew it was happening. I don't know because the TV didn't show. Sort of, you know, I'm assuming Liverpool had a free kick and wherever they put that, it just came right back at them. You were kind of thinking, could they have just not held the ball up? They're one of the best possession sides in Europe and indeed the world. Could they not just have kept the ball and just played them rondos that they like to do in training? You know, aren't they sort of trained for that? But then, you know, whatever, the ball comes back and Newcastle finish it in the way that they did. But obviously it felt like it was coming, and it's felt that way from, you know, the off the season pretty much, you know, from the new year anyway. You know, Liverpool, just, you kind of know there's something there. That's the worrying thing, is that it used to be that Liverpool would score late goals to win games and you were always knowing that it was going to come. But now it's like the other way around. You kind of know that there's going to be something that happens negatively, and they've got to shake that off, haven't they, going into next season? You know, I think the race for top four still isn't over with the fixtures sort of Chelsea and Leicester. I know they play each other, but there's loads of, you know, Chelsea will have their sort of focus on the Champions League, you would assume. And, you know, maybe they drop a few points. Liverpool have, what, 5 games now, and they've got to win all of them. And, you know, it's still well within reach, but dropping points at Leeds and Newcastle just, I think, was a week that sort of, in the madness of the Super League, summed up Liverpool's just calamitous season.
Didn't it just? James, you were there, and Kiefer mentioned it then. Did it feel to you, even when VAR overturned that decision and, you know, you're so close to the finishing line, did it feel to you that it was inevitable that Newcastle would still get another chance?
No. I wouldn't say not after the VAR decision. Certainly before the disallowed goal, you could just feel it was coming, because it was Liverpool just lost their way so alarmingly in that second half that a colleague in the press box turned to me and said, you know, after about 60 minutes, and said, "What do you reckon? Are we looking at, you know, Wilson 87 or 88? Should we have a sweepstake on what time the equaliser is going to go in?" Because it just felt that way. And the thing that struck me most, and it was, you know, glaringly, painfully obvious in those seconds after they had the free kick, after the, you know, after the disallowed goal, is what Liverpool have completely lost the ability to do, is to manage games and just take the sting out of proceedings. And that has been such a strength in the last couple of years, where, you know, how many times we said, oh, you know, Liverpool weren't great today, but do you know what, you know, they got in front and then they just didn't really give teams a chance. And I think a lot of it comes down to kind of belief and how many setbacks they've suffered over the course of this season. Because it was just ridiculous. You know, how many warnings, how many kind of slaps in the face did they want on Saturday? You know, and obviously once you get the massive let off with the VAR decision, I thought, what a slice of luck that is. Surely this will focus minds. All you've got to do now is keep the ball for 30, 40 seconds. And they couldn't do it. It was, it just about summed up the season, because, what, you know, what a ridiculous 90 minutes. You know, Liverpool actually played some great stuff in that first half. And could easily have been 3 or 4 goals up, you know, didn't take their chances. And then, you know, and as Klopp said himself, you know, because confidence is an issue, when they miss chances, the body language is really bad and shoulders hunch. And then second half, they just completely let Newcastle back into it.
So, Si, what is it at the moment? Is it confidence, self-belief? What can they not quite win back beyond the football that is affecting them so much?
I mean, it was the first game where I sort of came away from it actually questioning some of the players, really, perhaps even their futures, because I thought it was just far too casual from Liverpool. And I know they created chances, but they weren't ruthless. Obviously, they weren't ruthless because they only scored one goal. The final ball, the final pass, it was just too casual. It was like they're going through the motions, I thought. And I know, like, in the past, we've spoken about sort of the role of fans and how it's affected the team. But I just thought it was a theme throughout the game where they just weren't quick enough when they had to be. And I understand when you've got a full stadium, you tend to be a bit quicker with what you do. And, you know, you're not able to take that extra touch or take that extra split second on the ball. But for it to happen throughout the whole game, you know, from after scoring the first goal, I think they played with a bit of complacency. I think Liverpool, I think they just thought that the next goal would come and it didn't. And it ended up costing them. So when you create that number of chances, I wouldn't necessarily say it is an issue of confidence, because, you know, you sort of they kept going to the well and they kept creating opportunities for themselves. But it felt to me that they were going through the motions a little bit. It's the first time I've ever really felt that about a Jurgen Klopp Liverpool team, which doesn't reflect well on the players or the management, I think. So you could tell afterwards that he was really, really, really cheesed off about, you know, the style of the performance as well as the results. You know, obviously saying that Liverpool in this form don't deserve to be in the Champions League, essentially, and I think he's right. So, yeah, much to think about. I think it can't just be confidence and it can't just be one thing. I think it's lots of things, lots of reasons why Liverpool are playing like this. But they were, even despite all the chances that they created, I just thought when you don't play with a lack of urgency or... sorry, James has got his cat crawling all over me. I think that needs to be documented in the
it's licking his chin at the moment.
In the role description of the scenes. He looks like a genuine Bond villain now. But yeah, I thought it was a really poor performance and one that concerned me a little bit. One way you could say is the attitude of the players, right? When you're consistently as slow as Liverpool were. I mean, I thought the forward line, I thought Salah was constant, what was at it. I thought he was the one player that you could say was at it. But I said earlier, Firmino for me was like watching a cat play with a ball of string, permanently trying to get control of the ball, never seemed to be able to do that. Mane was a shadow of himself, just unable to affect the game. And Jota, I don't know whether the knock that he took to the head affected him, because it was like he couldn't see where the ball was sometimes. His passing was really poor. So it was on the basis of those three elements, I think you're going to struggle to win a football match.
Well, let's talk about goals in some detail. So 22 shots on goal, just one goal, wonderful goal, but let's face it, it wasn't enough at the end of the day. James, you said in your analysis, a new centre forward is urgently required.
Yeah, 100%. And I've felt it for quite some time. It's not just a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to a few results. I just think, you know, Firmino does worry me in terms of, I still think Sadio Mane will come again. I think he is enduring just like the first kind of genuine dip of his Liverpool career. I mean, eight Premier League goals at this stage of the season for someone of Mane's caliber is crazy when, you know, obviously he scored more than double that in the Premier League last season. But, you know, I think he'll come again. But when I watch Firmino, I just think his best days are behind him now. You know, I'd be amazed if he was moved on this summer, because Klopp absolutely adores him. You know, we've been so used to Firmino being one of the first names on the team sheet for most of his Liverpool career. And I just don't think that can be the case going forward. You know, as good as Jota has been, and, you know, I think obviously he has to be cut some slack. You know, he was very wasteful on Saturday, could have easily had a first half hat trick with the chances that he had. But, you know, he's had a really good first season at Liverpool, interrupted by a bad knee injury. But I think even with Jota, you know, you need another option. You need another, you know, just a proper kind of goal scorer, poacher. You know, surely the time has come this summer to kind of draw a line under Divock Origi's Liverpool career, and then, you know, you hopefully move him on and upgrade in that department, because it's just hurt Liverpool a lot, hasn't it? You know, Mo Salah, you know, another record for him on the weekend in terms of becoming the first Liverpool player to score 20 plus goals in three Premier League seasons. But, you know, he's been carrying the burden almost single-handedly for big chunks of the season, and he needs more help. And, you know, the other glaring issue is the lack of goals from midfield. You know, when you look at, you know, the numbers are absolutely dismal. I think, you know, Wijnaldum is Liverpool's highest scoring midfielder with two in the Premier League this season. You know, so that puts even more pressure and responsibility on the front line to deliver. And you know, even, you know, you look at the midfield, I thought it was telling at the weekend. You know, we haven't seen Naby Keita. He hasn't played a minute's football since he got dragged off in Madrid. You know, he didn't bring on Oxlade-Chamberlain. He didn't bring on Shaqiri. You know, these are supposed to be, you know, highly gifted attacking midfielders who can make the difference in the final third. And, you know, I think there have to be big question marks, you know, alongside the futures of all three of them.
Kiefer, just turn to what James was saying then about, you know, the forward line and, you know, the players they've currently got. Would you say none of them really are a recognised centre forward, and Liverpool have been playing with sort of skillful wingers and more dynamic players as opposed to that recognised Ian Rush, Robbie Fowler sort of player? And it sort of then begs the question, is that exactly what they need?
Yeah, I think it probably is, because I think you look at Firmino and he has been brilliant for such a long time, but the drop-off was, for all of them, was probably going to come. And I think, you know, him in that deeper line role on Saturday looked like a positive sort of step, like how you can, you know, put all four of them on the pitch at the same time. And he does seem to link up play so well, but that's all he's really done in his Liverpool career, is always, you know, feed those around him and make runs into space to open up space. And, you know, he's harassed people in terms of press, and I think that's probably his intensity's lowered there as well. But in terms of just sort of someone who you just know is going to finish, I don't think Liverpool have that. You know, even looking back, you had that with, you know, Sturridge was, say, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, you'd think he's finishing. Suarez, like Snap Torres, they were all players that as soon as they were one-on-one with the goalkeeper, you were like, they're 100% going to finish this chance, they're not missing. I don't think Mane or Salah or Firmino, you could probably say that about, even though, you know, the brilliant footballers and they've scored so many goals for Liverpool. And more often than not, it's just at the minute they're in this weird sort of zone where one-on-one, they just seem a little bit confident shot. I don't know. But Liverpool haven't had that player for a while, I don't think, that's what I always put it down to, who's going to be one-on-one with the goalkeeper and you're 100% certain they're going to score. And that feels like an out-and-out sort of number nine player, doesn't it? Someone who's just going to dominate and have that sort of confidence. Liverpool playing obviously such a different way in terms of, you know, getting the ball to the wings and, you know, Firmino opening up that space and what another, you know, people arriving late in the box. But you do kind of think, do they need someone now, someone big who's just going to be strong and sort of, not that you want to, you know, start playing hoofball by any means, you don't want to be doing that, but, you know, someone who's just going to, I don't know, provide a little something different, because it's sort of showing now that, you know, this season, I think you've saw the, obviously the fullbacks, the assists have gone down, you know, I think Klopp will continue to play this way, but I do think it's kind of dropping off and Liverpool aren't having as much joy with this system as maybe they used to. So maybe, you know, Klopp has to change it up a little bit. And I do think bringing Jota in would have helped to do that, because it's freshening up. I think probably no one probably really expected Jota to have the impact that he has had. I feel like he was probably always sort of someone maybe for, you know, a few seasons down the line, he was going to pick up minutes. But now, you know, very much looking at him as someone who could start week in, week out. But again, you know, he's a player who can play across the front line, so he's not typical centre forward. So it is interesting to see, you know, in what's going to be a mad market, who Liverpool would even go for. You know, James mentioned Origi and the other lads in midfield. They have to improve on that. So that's like such a massive and difficult task that awaits Jürgen, Michael Edwards and co.
Right, Si, let's go to yourself and talk about Mo Salah. You've written a piece recently talking about his qualities, but also the people around him and the influences that might affect where his future lies. And in particular, one man, Remy Abbas, is his agent. We're all fascinated to know what his future is from this point in. What did you determine after looking at it?
Well, I think from the outside, there's an impression that Rami Abbas sort of leads Salah, I think. I mean, there's a danger with sort of generalising people's reactions to things, particularly on social media, but I do think he's viewed as a particularly influential figure in terms of the direction that, Salah wishes to take. But, you know, the sort of the information coming back and the impressions that I had were quite the opposite, actually. What year was it? It was 2015, 16, when Rami Abbas started working with Mo Salah. Salah at that time wanted to take more of a control really on the direction of his career by moving away from what was a very big agency, Spox, which looks after players all over Europe. It's got a massive client base. Salah, in the space of three or four months, really moved, entered his association with them, went and worked with an Italian agent called Cristina Merici, and then bounced on from her to Rami Abbas. So he'd gone from, like, you know, being represented by a massive global organization to being represented by a guy who is a lawyer, basically. And he, quite interesting story behind how they met, because Salah was in London with at a meeting which was arranged by Merici, and she'd invited a Brazilian lawyer who had had quite a lot of success with getting players to and from Chelsea around that period. So the lawyer had invited Rami Abbas, who he'd worked with on a variety of transfers and various other things in and out of Cass in Switzerland with him. And Rami Abbas spoke Arabic. And I think that was the starting point of the relationship, really, the fact that Salah had sort of gravitated towards him and realised that this guy knew what he was doing. Abbas managed to get through quite a lot of complex legal issues with his, in relation to his contracts, both with Fiorentina and Roma. And within 6 months, it became basically his representative. So I think Salah saw him as a person who got things done, essentially, and realised the benefits of basically taking control of his own destiny, really. I know there's been quite a lot recently written about players who, like Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, Jordan Henderson, who've sort of moved away from having agencies represent them. Salah was sort of one of the first players to do that, I'd say, in this sort of the modern era, by essentially choosing just to work with a lawyer who advised them about certain issues and was able to sign contracts off. So since then, he's obviously become a very influential figure, but he doesn't have a big stable of players, really. Salah's obviously at the top of the tree for him, and it means that he gets all the attention that he needs. And at this moment in time, you know, from what I've been told, he is working on Salah's wishes, really. Mohamed Salah feels that he'd like to stay at Liverpool, but isn't necessarily getting the impression that Liverpool are quite as keen to get things done as quickly as he wants to. So there's a bit of an impasse at the moment. I mean, the one thing that I'd say that I didn't put in the piece, which I've sort of thought about quite a bit since, is that I sort of feel that Salah got rewarded with a big long-term contract after his great first season. But there was a bit of a, from his own personal perspective, I think he, in terms of his strategy, probably miscalculated what that would mean, because his contract at Liverpool essentially runs out when he'll be 31. So from Liverpool's perspective, that's not really a good age. It's a good age for a club to renegotiate, not necessarily a good age for a player, because most players by that point have obviously sort of reaching the back end of the careers. So it's not an age where you necessarily want to be renegotiating your last big deal, if you like. So Liverpool are sort of in quite a strong position at the moment, I would say. But if you want my view about the whole matter, I mean, I still think he's had a really good season for Liverpool. Excellent season, really, in terms of his goals. You do wonder where in the league they'd be without him, because obviously we've already spoken about the two other players that up front that haven't really performed to the levels you'd expect. So he's a really important player. I would say as well, limited options in a strange way, because I think he'd want to go and sign for, if it became an opportunity to leave Liverpool, I think he would obviously consider signing for Barcelona and Real Madrid. But I'd be majorly surprised that they have the sort of money that would make Liverpool consider a deal at the moment. So a bit of a strange time for players generally, I would say, you know, in terms of where they want to take their careers, because the traditional sort of clubs where you would aspire to sign, you know, the two big Spanish clubs don't have the funding to go and do it. So we will see. But I think this could run for quite a while, because he's still got, you know, a long period of time left on his contract, another two seasons after this one.
Kiva, let's face it, he's hit 20-plus goals now for another season, a fourth time. He's got to go down in the modern-day greats bracket, hasn't he?
Yeah, I tweeted to that effect as soon as his goal went in. Just, you know, when you look at the all-time list and he just keeps surpassing people on that, the more goals he scores, the higher up he's going. But I think as well, as this kind of like feeling where he's that good and been doing that much that it's almost been forgotten about a little bit. And sometimes we can overlook it in a way and we kind of don't realise that actually Liverpool have got in Salah and a lot of other players in the team, we know that. But in terms of his goal scoring record, I've got one of the best players in the club's history. I feel like that can sort of, you know, be swept into things when Liverpool have been successful and this season they haven't been successful. So the talk's been elsewhere. But I think he will go down once he leaves Liverpool as one of the greatest ever. And I think to do that as well, I think he has to stay for those couple of seasons. If he was to leave this summer, there would sort of then be maybe question marks over, you know, whether he was... he's always going to be a great, a Liverpool great, but I feel like if he left in some cloud of, you know, madness, or he was like, you know, there was a big situation in the summer or something like that, I feel like if he went in the same way maybe Torres did, for example, you can't look at him in that way then, can you? But, I mean, he surpassed Torres and Suarez, who in our, you know, modern era as fans, they were adored by Liverpool fans, and Salah's just gone one better season on season. And to think that, you know, that first season was just so enjoyable when you think back to watching, because no one expected it. And then the seasons after that, you know, it was kind of like it was more fun, because it was like everyone said he was going to be this one season wonder. You know, here we are four seasons down the line and he's still doing the business for Liverpool. I think as Simon mentioned, you know, he's been holding his own when a lot of other players haven't this season. And yeah, he's missed a lot of chances, but he's still scoring a lot of goals as well. When the time does come, and I hope that time's not just yet, and you know, maybe if it is in a couple of years' time, that he can leave the club as one of the greats, because I think he already is, and a lot of the players at the club for, you know, that exit over the last few seasons are living legends in terms of any team of players who win the Champions League or go down in Liverpool history, but winning that Premier League as well after so long. You know, they were always gone. But then you kind of look to the stats and it's like, it's insane, but it's almost like we're all just sort of, we almost sort of overlook it, don't we, I think, which is the crazy sort of world that Jurgen Klopp has brought us to, which is a lovely thing, I think.
The Red Agenda, your exclusive Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Simon, what's going to be the lasting effect of this season, especially if Liverpool don't get into a Champions League place? If they landed in a Europa League conference place, for example, you know, what is the longer term effect of all this?
Well, it's obviously not a good thing. I'm writing about it this week, actually, so there should be a piece going up in The Athletic over the next couple of days. But yeah, I mean, we've spoken about it many times, about sort of the real economic world that Liverpool operates in. So if you take out potential earnings of how much, I'm just trying to remember how much they earn from the Champions League by getting to two successive finals, obviously a lot of money, merely by, you know, qualifying and playing in the group stages. I think it's, how much is it worth, James? Do you know?
It was worth 70 million to Liverpool last season and about 60 million this season.
So, you know, that's a very good player, isn't it? You know, a couple of very good players potentially. So it is going to affect them one way or another. They're going to have to work harder to create the financial world where they're able to reinvent the squad. Because as James mentioned before, I think there's four or five players there on the bench who haven't been getting on. I can't really imagine that they're, you know, at the moment they must be thinking about their futures. You know, they're going to have to try and command some decent fees for those players to reharvest the squad, really. And I do think it's reached that point. You know, they've had 3 or 4 years together now, this team, and every team comes towards the end of a cycle. But what you don't really want to happen, of course, is for that cycle to come to an end just at the point when you're not in the Champions League, because it just adds a lot more pressure on the club to try and get back up the ladder again. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to make things harder again next season, particularly. I mean, it's just a basic thing. I mean, if you're having to play midweek games in a competition, the European competition, which yields very little financially, you know, that then places more pressure on the Premier League campaign, which we sort of still know is the thing that everybody wants to win. I think, you know, in terms of from a fan base, I think having won the Premier League without necessarily having the experience of being able to celebrate it, I think there's still a big desire for that to happen again soon. So yeah, I think it's going to make things much harder for Liverpool. Obviously, Michael Edwards has created a reputation for himself in terms of an operator who's able to see value where other clubs don't. I think it's really, really going to be put to a test, a different type of test that he's had to deal with in the past, where, you know, the sort of at a different point in the club's history now where the challenge has changed. So there's going to be a lot of focus on what he does this summer, and he's going to have to, dare I say it, I think last summer, I think he had, on reflection, we weren't saying at the time, I hate to be revisionist, but I think in terms of the sales last summer, I think it was a pretty bad summer. I think they wanted to get rid of three or four players and weren't able to do so. So the people that win the transfer market this summer are the ones who are going to be able to see what value really looks like in a change in time. So he's going to have to maybe adjust his expectations of what a good deal is for Liverpool to make sure that they get the deals on players that they want to sign effectively. And hopefully, it sounds like obviously the Konaté deal is inching closer. I think that's a good start. I think it's a position that they need. But as James said, further up the pitch is where you have to spend. And let's not forget, I mean, I know they signed Firmino, Mane, Salah for players that you wouldn't necessarily have gone and said, well, they have to be signed. They're going to become Liverpool, really good Liverpool players. But they spent minimum of 25, 30 million on Firmino 5 or 6 years ago. So they're going to need to spend that level of money plus or more to make sure that they have the replacements and the competition in the team to go and have a go at the competitions that matter next season.
James, I think it's pretty hard to stomach, isn't it? You know, it's like being dropped from a great height to go from winning the Champions League, winning the Premier League to probably, and realistically now, not making the Champions League. I don't know whether you feel that way. It almost feels like it's something that they're not going to achieve at this stage. You know, the other teams aren't dropping the points required and Liverpool aren't taking advantage of their opportunities.
Yeah, I'd be amazed if Liverpool ended in the top four from here. I think I was relatively optimistic a week, 10 days ago, but then, yeah, to fall apart like they did against Leeds and similarly against Newcastle. As Klopp, you know, he was very honest, wasn't he, post-game on Saturday? He said, you know, at the moment, how can he possibly stand there and say they deserve Champions League football next season? They don't. You know, that was why him and the players were so appalled by those Super League plans, because, you know, part of the thing is they, you know, when you achieve something in football, you want to be able to say you've earned it. You know, that was why they didn't have any time for those T-shirts that Leeds suggested they put on for the warm-up at Elland Road, because it was like, they don't need telling that. That's the way they want it to be. And the reality is, as things stand, you know, Liverpool have fallen, you know, a massive, you know, distance this season when you compare this where the standards were to where they are now. I mean, you know, what crazy statistic during the rounds at the weekend was that, you know, you look at the teams in that kind of bottom six or seven of the league, I think Liverpool haven't won any of eight league games against Newcastle, Fulham, West Brom, Brighton and Burnley, which, you know, that's limited opposition that you should be putting away with a minimum of first, regardless of injuries to frontline centre half. So it is going to cut deep, and it will have an impact on summer transfer plans. There's no doubt about that, because it's, you know, no Champions League football would leave a big hole in the finances.
Manchester United next up in what is just a handful of games left. And at this point, United 13 points ahead of Liverpool, James. I suppose the positive for Jurgen Klopp is his team have been playing better away.
Yeah. They have, and you know, against the results have actually been better against the better teams. It's actually been they've had real issues trying to break down teams that do not, you know, don't really come out and play against them, and that has been the bigger issue. So you'd like to think that with a full week on the training field to prepare, and that Klopp will be capable of triggering a reaction. But yeah, it's, you know, I think even winning all five might not be enough now. But I just think it's really important. Even if Liverpool do miss out on the top four, you need to, you don't want this season to just fall to pieces. Because I think it is difficult to then, it's very difficult to then just draw a line under it and say, well, it doesn't matter. We'll just all come back together in July and everything will be fine then. Because I just think that's completely unrealistic. And yeah, and I also think it's unrealistic to think that, you know, yes, it'd be brilliant to get Virgil van Dijk back in that team, but he's not going to be, you know, he's not a stick in plaster that's going to fix everything. You know, that it's a team that's malfunctioning in pretty much all departments at the moment. So yeah, there's a lot for Klopp to ponder. You know, and I know people will say, oh, you know, that he needs a rebuild, he needs to do this and that. I just think you've got to be realistic what's possible to do in one window. And, you know, even the kind of bare essentials that need to be done will become a lot more problematic, both financially and in terms of attracting players, if you aren't in the Champions League. And you know, and the other thing, as Simon said, is I think Liverpool, again, like last summer, will struggle to get the kinds of fees for players they're looking to offload that we've come to expect. You know, when you think of the deals that Michael Edwards did for, you know, Solanke and Benteke and, you know, Brad Smith and Jordan Ibe and people like that, I don't think it's going to be that kind of market this summer when they're trying to shift players like Harry Wilson and Gruitch and potentially Shaqiri and Shea Ojo, and, you know, still trying to find a permanent place for Loris Karius. So, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done this summer. But it, yeah, it's definitely a squad that, you know, regardless of what the next month brings, it needs freshening up, you know, even if that's just, you know, two or three high caliber new faces.
It's not just problems on the pitch, it's off the pitch, as you've mentioned there, and also around the governance. And Kiva, we know that the Manchester United fans are organising a protest ahead of Manchester United, Liverpool. By the time that happens, it'll be a couple of weeks on from the collapsed European Super League. But what is the step forward in terms of Liverpool looking closer to home and perhaps how they listen to the fans and react to what's happened?
Yeah, well, you saw, I think it was Spirit of Shankly, wasn't it, calling for more fan consultation to get fans on the board. And I feel like, you know, that's why clubs who you know, would never even dare to dream of doing this wouldn't have done it, because you look at, like, Everton's statement, perhaps, and I know they've got, you know, lifelong supporters there. And I'm not sure how Liverpool's board completely looks, but I'm certain they haven't got someone just, you know, who's a match-going fan. And I feel like, you know, they need someone who's got that sort of, you know, that knowledge and experience, and just to know and avoid these situations, that because they are, you know, avoidable. The furloughing last summer or last April, whenever that was, you know, that would have been avoided if someone would have been there to say, this isn't going to go down very well. And you feel like the exact same thing for tickets and the trademarking and all that kind of stuff. If there's fans there to say, this isn't going to go get looked at very well, this isn't going to come across well, like, we probably shouldn't do this, then I think these things are probably avoidable. But then the worry is that maybe they're not, and maybe FSG are just kind of driven in that way, you know, the money driven sort of environment football is. And, you know, maybe they wouldn't necessarily listen, but we don't know, because there's no one there to you know, speak up for fans. And you know, there's great.
You see, well, look, other clubs have gone down this route, like Arsenal, United will next week with the fan power coming out. Liverpool seem to have refrained from that. We didn't see it at the weekend against Newcastle. Maybe that was because supporters felt it would go against Jürgen's wishes.
Yeah, I think there was supporters at the ground, wasn't there? And they were cheering the coach in. I don't think there's, you know, you're seeing a lot of FSG out sort of stuff on social media, but I think a lot of people are thinking that, you know, the apology arrived and people were happy with that. But I think as the banner outside Anfield read, you know, it won't be forgotten, like none of those things I've mentioned will. But I think in terms of sort of going forward, who would buy Liverpool, who would, I don't think that's even a question. I don't think people are thinking into, they want FSG out the club. You know, maybe this time last week it very much felt like that, but It's, you know, that's such a long process to sell a club, to buy a club. Like, that stuff can go on. And I feel like, I don't know, it is such a tricky sort of time now for Liverpool fans, that they're not going to forget what happened. And the hope, I think, is that they're going to have, you know, FSG are going to back Jürgen in the market this summer. I think that's the hope, because, you know, summers in the past, maybe even you look at the summer after the Champions League, there wasn't a lot of business done. And maybe, you know, in terms of transfers, they can prove themselves to Liverpool fans, because I think that's what they want. They just want a good squad, don't they? I think, you know, you look at Man City winning the League Cup yesterday and their squad's ridiculous. I don't think Liverpool have quite had that level of squad depth, you know, and that's been exposed this season with the injuries. So I think it's not the fans are happy with what's happened, but it's kind of like, to remove ownership, I think, would maybe be a step beyond what they possibly want, just because it would be such a difficult thing to happen and to do. And hopefully, you know, I think a lot of fans are thinking it was, you know, a horrible few days, wasn't it? But, you know, they're hopefully behind us. And to get people on the board, you know, for more maybe fan ownership, you know, for fans to, like the German model, 50+1, I don't know how long away we'd be from something like that. But, you know, to have more fans connected with the club, because we know how important that is.
So what would you be comfortable with hearing from FSG and John W. Henry in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I'm sorry, but I didn't think his apology stacked up, to be honest. I mean, he said we were acting in the best interests of Liverpool Football Club. Well, why didn't he ask anybody on the ground what they thought about this? I do think that Henry, to be honest, is a bit of a problem. I think because he obviously makes out all the final decisions, he's taken a lot of heat off, I suppose, people on Merseyside, which I suppose you could say is decent leadership to some extent. But I feel that, you know, it's just become a joke now. How many times are you going to apologise for making mistakes like this? I mean, they've been in charge of the club for 10 years. Sorry to go on, sounds like I'm launching into another rant that people have been in, but they're just going to find themselves in the same position again in a few months. Every 6 months, there's some sort of thing that they get wrong. And it doesn't help themselves. So I think you have to change the way you think. I think there's almost two clubs at Liverpool. There's Merseyside, what happens in Merseyside, and obviously the London office, and then Boston. And unfortunately, again, this week's just illustrated that things aren't connected as much as they like to think. There are more than enough people at Liverpool who could have given them a bit of advice on how it would transpire and what they might have to do to get it over the line if they really wanted it to happen. But yeah, it's a big mess. And I think that for a lot of people now, I mean, sorry to sort of maybe argue against what Kiva said, but I think for a lot of people, it's going to be an awfully long way back for them to earn the trust that is needed for a healthy environment. Maybe it's fortunate at the moment that there is, you know, maybe it's, well, there is no people inside Anfield to really gauge how the fan base, the match-going fan base feels. Because I think if this has happened whilst games were being played in front of a live audience, I think it would have been a lot more visual than we've seen potentially. So yeah, I would say that I agree. I think that there does need to be some sort of improvements on the way the club is structured, and clearly they just haven't quite got it right yet. I mean, they've had how many CEOs since FSG been in E&A? Peter Moore, Billy Hogan. I thought it was interesting that John Henry apologised to Billy Hogan, because obviously he was at the centre of the story. I know The Athletic published the email that he sent round, where he sort of spoke enthusiastically and confidently about the future in the Super League. I think the CEO position at Liverpool's always been quite an interesting one, because it's almost the point of contact with the owners. I think this put Billy Hogan on the back foot again. I think the apology, I find it hard to believe that somebody who works in, or who's worked for a long time in global partnerships and understands what money means to Liverpool implicitly, that he didn't have any role within what was going on. He must have at least advised them on the potential earnings that this move would make. But that's not to say that he was, you know, part of the actual process when it came to the final days. He might have not known what was coming necessarily. I think that's why John Henry apologised to him, because it all landed on him at a local level. But there's something that's not quite working. I don't know what the solution is necessarily, but I do feel that they need to communicate better with people who have a better understanding of reactions and moods, because, you know, they made the same mistake over and over and over again now. It's just not good enough.
Let's finish on one great piece of leadership, and that's something which James has honed in on this week, a piece on Jordan Henderson. Yet again, just showing what a man he is on and off the pitch, James.
Yeah, 100%. I think we've seen it time and time again, haven't we? Off the field as well as on it, what a leader he's become. And Liverpool are very, very fortunate to have him. And it was typical of the way that he is and what he stands up for, that that he was so involved in that response in terms of mobilising the dressing room once they realised that the owners had signed up to this Super League. I know the players were completely in the dark. They found out like everyone else on social media over the course of Sunday, building up to that late Sunday night announcement, and they shared the kind of disgust of the supporters in terms of they didn't want this. I think as Jordan wrote in his program notes at the weekend, you know, sport is about risk and reward, and you want to be able to earn something. You don't want to be given it on a plate, and especially at a club like Liverpool, where you know the history of the club is synonymous with the Champions League, and the idea for the players of like the club turning its back on that and going off on their own into a closed shop was just absolutely abhorrent. And he was massive in terms of the players' WhatsApp group, you know, sorting out what their response was going to be. Also, I know he heavily involved in the discussions with Klopp and Mike Gordon as well, you know, left Mike Gordon in absolutely no doubt about the players' feelings on this. And it takes guts, and it takes, you need to have a real moral compass, I think, on times like that. It'd be easy, footballers sometimes get a rough press, don't they, in terms of, they're only in it for the money and all the rest of it. But Jordan Henderson really does care, and he could see what was so massively wrong with this and the damage that it, the damage it was risking in terms of the bond that this team and this manager have got with the supporters as well, because it was very unfair that the players felt that angry backlash from Leeds fans at Elland Road last Monday. But it was, unfortunately they are with the live bird on their chest, they were the ones that were visible and that were targeted. So I think John W. Henry could learn a thing from the leadership that Jordan Henderson's shown. And again, it was only the latest, wasn't it, with Jordan Henderson, when you think back to the way in which he mobilised the Premier League captains with the Players Together initiative that raised millions for NHS charities, with the way in which he's made a stand for LGBT rights, the speaking out against racism, recently handing over all his social media channels to a cyberbullying organisation. So yeah, he's absolutely immense in terms of just, I think as a figurehead and someone who stands up for what is right. Yeah, as well as, I'd really like to see fan representation on the board going forward, because I think, I think FSG have done irreparable damage to their legacy at Liverpool. But if John Henry is serious about listening, which he says he is, then, that to me is a common sense scenario to actually have some kind of fan representation that you can use as a sounding board. And he should also be using Jordan Henderson as a sounding board a lot more, because if he had done, then they could have avoided all this sorry mess.
Some brilliant pieces on The Athletic at the moment. James on Jordan Henderson, Kiva on the fans around the world and their reaction to the failed European Super League, and Si's piece on Mo Salah, just some of them that are well worth reading. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast today. Not exactly full of cheeriness, but Manchester United, Liverpool next week, and we hope for a better podcast then in terms of content, and maybe Liverpool can pull one out of the bag at Old Trafford. Thanks for listening to The Red Agenda. We'll be back in a week.
The Athletic.